Hi everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Product Marketing Insider podcast. My name is Lawrence Chapman and I'm a senior copywriter here at the Product Marketing Alliance. Are you wondering how to align the product marketing function at your organization? Do your internal teams have little or no understanding of what product marketing is and the benefits you bring to the fore? Are you sick of being misunderstood? Well, Product Marketing's brand new book, Misunderstood, features first-hand knowledge, techniques, and case studies to help you demystify product marketing, elevate the function, and gain the recognition you and your fellow product marketers deserve. Learn how to effectively communicate the value you bring to key processes such as positioning, personas, segmentation, and OKRs, and gain its supplementary intel from the likes of G2, Intercom, and Adobe. Misunderstood's packed with key takeaways that will propel the value of your role and the overall importance of the product marketing function, and it isn't to be missed. Get your copy at pmmalliance.co/misunderstood. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Jana Freyhoff, product marketing lead at Spendesk. A PMA ambassador and top 100 product marketing influencer for 2021, Jana is currently establishing a new marketing function at Spendesk focused on product-led growth. She has global experience in marketing and strategy and has honed her skills in Paris, London, the USA, and Brussels, taking products from early concepts to full market launches and adoption, leading strategic initiatives and overseeing product marketing for key solution lines. Thanks so much for joining me, Jana. So to start, can you please explain your current role at Spendesk for us, please?
Sure. So I am the product marketing lead at our self-serve product marketing squad. Our goal is to build out the marketing arm of product-led growth and enable customers to self-serve through product. Our goals are really to drive product-led customer acquisition, increase conversion and expansion through our product. And I think it's really exciting time to be at Spendesk right now because we have just became a unicorn. And we even got tweeted about by the French president. So I think that was one of the real highlights of my career so far.
Oh, exciting. Really exciting. What is it that made you want to become a product marketer in the first place?
So I'm actually a lawyer by training, and I've worked in Brussels in the energy and climate change sector for a few years. And even though I really loved the sector and the mission, I lacked a certain level of tangibility, and I really missed seeing concrete results that happen quickly. So I started soul searching, and I actually didn't know that product marketing existed. I think that's a standard response from a lot of product marketers. And I came across product marketing by a complete fluke, basically.
Yeah, you're definitely right. It's a standard response that we get sometimes. So it's like, oh, I'm an accidental product marketer, and I didn't really know what product marketing was. So yeah, you're definitely not on your own in that regard. So almost like, you know, can you talk us through your career path from your initial role to where you are now at Spendesk?
Sure. So the way I got into product marketing originally was that I basically followed a few companies I really liked within the energy sector. And one of them was Opower, which uses behavioral science to drive energy efficiency at mass scale. And one day I came across a job spec for product marketing analyst, and I loved the job description. It was exactly what I wanted to do, even though I have never heard of the title before. I became part of Opower, and that was an American startup. It was full of incredibly smart people, a lot of Harvard graduates. And I was their only European product marketer, and I was responsible for the go-to-market strategy for Europe for their product line. And within a year of me starting at Opower, the company was bought by Oracle, which was actually quite interesting because I happened to be in the headquarters at the time it happened. And I actually found out through my brother, who is a pilot, but he's really into trading and stock. He texted me saying, your company was just bought by Oracle, which was very interesting. I stayed on for several years, and I must say it was really amazing. I learned basically the product marketing trade there, I was really lucky to have a bunch of amazing mentors, including Neil Goulart, Julia London, and John So, who really taught me the secrets of the product marketing trade. And after a few years, that's when I lived in London, I moved to France and I joined a leader in API management in France, which allowed me to work on different aspects of product marketing, such as campaigns and sales plays and analyst relations. And a few months ago, I joined Spendesk. Just a few months before we got our Series C extension, which enabled us to become a unicorn, and that's where I am today.
Exciting. So it's been quite a journey, and you kind of touched on analyst relations, and it's something that we'll pick up, a little bit later on. But for the time being, can you just let us know a little bit about what your direct team looks like at Spendesk in terms of numbers and roles?
Sure. So the self-serve product marketing team, that's going to consist of three people in total. It's myself. Then I have Nina Mayer on the team, who's a trilingual product marketer who speaks fluent German, French, and English. She's absolutely amazing. And she's in charge of activation and education. And she's actually building our training center for our customers. And I'm currently hiring for a second person on the team, who'll be in charge of customer communications and building out our user community. So I think in terms of structure of product marketing teams, this is probably slightly unusual, but I think it really shows the fact that we're actually focusing on product-led growth. So it's really very different from traditional product marketing.
Yeah, sure. And which departments would you say you interact with most, and what's your relationship with them like?
So again, this is really, this is quite interesting because it's really different from what I've been used to in the past, because in the past I really worked more in the traditional marketing and sales-led enterprises where I would work very closely with sales and product managers aligned with specific products. But actually at Spendesk, because I'm focusing on product-led growth, I'm working very closely with customer success team, user care team. I still work very closely with product managers, but they more focus on particular processes and parts of the user journey. So it's mainly the growth and expansion squad. And actually I work very closely with data and engineering as well, because so many things happen within the product. That's basically how we interact with customers. So I often need their help, I'd say.
Yeah, sure. And as we mentioned before, we kind of touched on analyst relations, and that's something that I'd like to obviously focus on in greater detail in this episode. So from your perspective, why is it particularly important within product marketing? Like, what role does analyst relations have to play?
Mm-hmm. So in my experience, I think there are two key reasons. So one reason I'd call inbound reason, and that is that the analysts, they really have a great read on the market, the buyers, and your competition. And as product marketers, we are responsible for developing go-to-market strategies and keeping tabs on all these aspects. I often got the greatest insights from analysts because they have really this intimate knowledge from these three key aspects of the market. And then the second key reason, that's more of an outbound reason, and it really depends on how your buyers buy. But for enterprise buyers, analysts are really key source of sort of shortlisting potential vendors. So as product marketers, we can really influence analyst rankings to rank highly and then influence the buyer decisions and be shortlisted, for example.
Okay. And in the State of Product Marketing Leadership Report from this year that we've just published, we found that 42% of product marketers said that they're solely responsible for analyst relations. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that discovery. Is that something that surprised you at all? Is that something that you'd expect?
Actually, that doesn't surprise me. I think it shows a variety within the product marketing approach to analyst relations that I've actually seen across the different companies I've been part of. I think it depends on two things. I think the first one is, do you do analyst relations at all? at the company in general. And again, that really depends on your buyers. Like if analyst rankings are not important to your buyers, maybe as a company, you don't really invest those resources in analyst relations. And then the second question is, if you do analyst relations, where does it sit within the company? I think within bigger companies, you probably have dedicated analyst relations resources. And I've often seen that within product, actually. But I think within smaller companies, you would see people wearing several hats. And I think that's where I would probably expect product marketing to be a lot more involved and more solely responsible for analyst relations.
And what would be your advice to the 15% of product marketers who indicated that they had no analyst relations strategy in place at all at their company?
So I would actually start by thinking if you really need it. Because I think, as I now mentioned a couple of times, I think it really depends on your buyers. Like if your buyers buy because they focus on return on investment and they really make huge purchase decisions, they tend to look at analyst rankings. But I think if your buyers are end consumers who really focus on their pains, they still look at advice, they still look at reviews and rankings, but I think they don't look necessarily at analysts, but they may look at, I don't know, like G2 or, you know, more end user type of reviews that are not necessarily analyzed and parsed through by an analyst. So I think I would really start thinking, do you really need it? Because it actually takes up a lot of resources. And then if you do decide to put in place analyst relations, then I would really start with being strategic, because you can't go after all the analysts. There is easily tens and tens of analysts in the market. So I think you should really be strategic with your choice in terms of where you're going to focus your efforts. And I think you should focus on the key analysts in your market, because I think in each software segment, there is maybe only one or two analysts that the vendors tend to listen to. I think the most common ones are Gartner and Forrester, but then also there are specialized analysts who focus on a particular aspect, for example, security. So if your competitive differentiator is security, you may want to consider really focusing on the analysts who do reports on security. And then you really have to build the relationships with these analysts and brief them frequently. You want to brief them about any new releases you have, any big client wins. You really want to build a relationship over the year, because then you have to develop this extra effort once a year or once every 2 years when they do the big rankings. But it's really just the culmination of the relationship they have built with you over the couple of years and what they've seen you deliver. So it really takes a lot of effort and consistency to really have proper analyst relations built within the company.
Okay, and what would be almost like your golden tips to companies who may be beginning to put the initial steps in place for an initial analyst relations program?
So I think I would really start with the strategy. Be clear on which analysts you're going to go after. Secondly, be really consistent. Don't have everyone from your company talk to the analysts. Just select a few people that brief those analysts over the time. And typically, it's great to have someone more at the senior level of the company from product and product marketing. And that really ensures that you build a relationship, because they keep seeing the same people from your company. They also know what they've said before. So they really it really enables them to stay on message and stay consistent. And, you know, you can show, for example, in January, you may show vision, and in September, you may show this is how we delivered on the vision. So you really show the consistency in the message. And you can demonstrate that you really delivered on your plans. And then really have resources to do so, because it really takes a lot of time to brief analysts and build that relationship over time. But also don't forget to get their input from analysts. So sometimes you can also schedule sessions where you just present an idea to them and ask them, what do you think? How do you think market would react to this? So it's It's a two-way street with analysts. You should definitely brief them and keep them up to date on what you're doing, but also make sure you get the intelligence from them because, as I said before, they have really great intel on the market.
Awesome. And what steps can product marketers put in place to improve an existing analyst relations program?
So I think it's probably... As a PMM, I should probably start with evaluation and analysis of what the gaps in those programs are. But I must say the problem I have seen most often is lack of consistency. Because if you do have different people talking to analysts over the year, they will tell them different things. And the analyst really ranks you on the ability to execute and really deliver on your vision. So if you keep sending them inconsistent message, I think that can really hurt you in your rankings. So be mindful of what you said to them before, and really try to be consistent in with your messaging, but also with the people who present those messages.
Okay, and kind of switching the focus back to your own product marketing career. And what would you say the top three skills are that have helped you to get where you are today? And if you had to pinpoint it to three separate skills, what would you say they would be?
I think it's a combination of skills and approaches. Because I think one of the things that immensely helped me over time is the fact that I'm comfortable with just figuring things out on the fly a little bit. I think as product marketers, we often solve new problems that we have not come across before. And we have to often dive into areas that we have no previous knowledge of. And I think this being comfortable with deep diving into things you have no idea about and trying to figure it out, I think it's really important. So it's more of an approach. I think another approach that I think is important is not working in isolation and really looking at the big picture, because product marketing is really a cross-functional role. So you can never work in isolation. I always try to get input from a lot of people and try to understand what different departments are doing, if we're really going in the right direction overall. And in terms of skills, I think it's really analysis and strategic thinking. That's something I really enjoy as well. But I feel like in product marketing, we always start with analyzing the problem and analyzing the area. And that's done through a lot of different ways, including obviously customer voice and customer research. But I think that's sort of, I almost feel that's the first step I take no matter what I do. So I probably didn't quite say three top skills, but these are the three different things I believe that that have helped me in my career.
And what do you say there's a crossover at all between what you do and what a PM does at your company?
So this question genuinely made me laugh because I think it's the never-ending problem with the relationship between PM and PMM. And honestly, this demarcation has been really different in every single company I've worked at, which was quite interesting because in every single company I've worked at, I focus on slightly different part of product marketing, partly because of this demarcation as well. I think at Spendesk, I think it could be defined a bit better. And I think sometimes people just naturally pick up tasks that are naturally on the product marketing side. But I think it's a lot due to the fact that we are really in the period of hyper growth, and we are going from a company that was a startup to a scale up that, you know, is a unicorn on a growth. So I think with that, you have a lot of new people coming in. You still have a lot of people who are used to wearing different hats and don't really see clear demarcations of different roles. And you're also at stage where you have to establish clear roles and responsibilities and really clear processes. So I think there is some overlap today, but I think we're really working on making the definition really clear. And in general, I think it also goes down to the fact that it's really friendly environment and culture. So people just sort of work together sometimes without, you know, not necessarily staying within their traditional role, but it's because the collaboration just works quite naturally.
Great. And in your opinion, what do you think needs to perhaps change about product marketing to make it even better than it is already?
So I think I'm probably going to provide another cliche answer, but I think it's the fact that no one else really understands what we do. And it's quite ironic because we are all about positioning, but I think and explaining the value of a product, but I think we probably don't do a great job of it ourselves. So I think it's really what should improve about product marketing is really the perception and understanding of other teams and departments of what product marketing really is.
No, that's great. And there's no such thing as a cliche as far as I'm concerned. Jana, it's fine. I so many cliches on the podcast. So it's been a great discussion. I've really enjoyed exploring analyst relations. It's a topic that we've not really covered too much on the show, so thank you so much. And just to kind of round things off, really, if there are any new or aspiring product marketers listening to this episode, which I hope there are, what would your advice be to them to almost help them get the most out of their upcoming journey?
So my first message to them is lucky you, because I believe there's never been an easier time to become a product marketer, because I feel there is huge demand, but they're still in very short supply. I think to get into product marketing, really think about the crossover, because I think to get into product marketing, either you come from a discipline that's similar to product marketing. So it could be product management or different part of marketing, or I often seen management consultants as the first jobs before going into product marketing, or different way. And this is how I got into product marketing, is to really focus on the sectors that you're an expert on. So I was an expert on energy and climate change, and I joined a climate change energy efficiency startup. So really think about, are you an expert on a particular sector, and then look into product marketing roles within that sector, because product marketers are basically subject matter expert on the solution or that area. That's the advice for the aspiring product marketers.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Jana. I really enjoyed getting your perspectives. I've certainly learned a thing or two, and I'm sure that many other people will too. All that's left for me really is to say is thank you again so much, and all the very best for the rest of 2022.
Thank you so much, Lorenz. The same for you.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Before we leave you to get on with your day, if you want to get involved, here are a few ways you can. If you're a product marketer and you want to come on the show and speak about your day, a specific topic, or your role in general, that's one option. If you want to flex your podcast hosting skills, being a guest host is another. And finally, if you or your company want to sponsor an episode, there's a third. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.